And that's the oh-so-peppy music that means it's time again for Pop Culture Happy Hour, NPR's Pop Culture Roundtable podcast, where the cocktails are fictional, but the conversation is quite real. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See, and I'm here at the table with the Pop Culture Happy Hour crew. Glenn Weldon, tell me who you are and what you do for NPR.
I write about books and comic books for the NPR website.
And Trey Graham, what do you do?
I do movies coverage and occasionally mummies coverage.
And, oh, hey.
Hello, Linda.
It's Stephen Thompson. Stephen, what do you do for NPR?
Well, I am an editor at NPR Music.
And how's everything going for you today, Stephen?
That's a good question. I've been trying to process.
Shut it.
I've been trying
that
to...
That was a Will-donated sigh, if ever there was one.
I've been trying to process this strange cluster of emotions that I've experienced in the last... we're taping this on Monday.
Right.
So let's say 24 hours.
Right.
And there's this strange new sensation that appears to be something approximating joy.
Joy?
Joy.
Why would that be?
Well, the Packers won the Super Bowl.
For those of you who are new to the podcast or perhaps have missed it for the last couple of weeks, Stephen has been hotly anticipating the Super Bowl in which the Packers yesterday played the Pittsburgh Steelers. And how'd that turn out, Stephen?
It doesn't seem real. I'm sorry. The Packers won 31-25, and I, at various times, shrieked in sort of addled delight.
Yes, you did.
Cried in front of dozens of my coworkers.
I saw that, yeah.
And in celebration of a defensive touchdown, threw my puddly little fist in the air and bashed it into a door jamb, just straight on as if I'd been aiming for it, which is, by the way, the third time I've hurt myself doing that. On previous occasions, I've torn up my knuckles, scraping them across a sort of stucco-ish ceiling.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah.
Once I punched out a ceiling fan and just smashed the glass globe as if aiming for it.
I'm thinking that you need to get higher ceilings or more restraint.
I have a feeling one of those is more likely than the other.
Or at least don't stand in door jams. What are you
preparing? I know. That was what was really foolish.
You were preparing for an earthquake.
But I was so busy.
It's hard to believe that you still haven't learned that lesson after the light fixture. I thought the light fixture would be the last one. Well, and I had the pleasure of watching the Super Bowl with you, and I will say that I was in another room, and we had a delay of about 2 seconds from the main TV where most people were to the overflow TV that I was watching. So, for instance, you would be watching a play. It would be getting to the point where you could see whether the pass was going to be caught or not. And a second or two before the pass either was or wasn't caught, you would either hear, "Yay!" or you would hear, "Oh!" So it was like
takes
spoilers.
All the suspense right out of it, doesn't
it?
Yeah,
there were
spoilers.
Constant football spoilers all through this game by 2 seconds.
We tried to get the crowd upstairs to actually say, "Spoiler!"
Yeah, exactly.
Before reacting.
It wasn't working.
You know, there was something wonderful about seeing Stephen so...
lose his...
You know, well, you know, so transparent and, you know, clear with...
Unlike all the other times in which I hold my cards jealously close to the vest.
So very close to his chest. It was great fun. As I may have mentioned on Twitter the second after it happened, he really truly did squeal like a little girl at the end of the game.
Yeah. Like a very, very loud girl.
The voice went way up to the top of his head. Oh my God!
Yeah, that
won the Super Bowl!
Yeah, that came through
cute.
To the overflow room. that reached the overflow room. And our esteemed producer, Mike Katzeff, was also there. Glenn Weldon, you were not there.
I was driving back from Philly to see my mom. I love my mom more than I love chicken and football.
Now we've not yet explained. Regular listeners to the podcast know that Stephen has previously talked about the fact that his Super Bowl party, where Trey and I and Mike all were yesterday, is also Chicken Bowl, the competitive chicken eating event.
Correct.
Of the season.
This was Chicken Bowl 15.
Chicken Bowl 15.
And if you only go to one football party in which people eat competitively, I recommend Chicken Bowl 15.
Right. And we have been asked already on Facebook, what the heck happened with Chicken Bowl? Who won Chicken Bowl? We know who won the Super Bowl, but what happened at Chicken Bowl?
You know, and you would think, given the amount of coverage of the Super Bowl, that this nugget of information...
Yeah, where were the Wire reporters?
Yeah.
You know, there probably were some reporters present.
There may have been a couple of reporters present.
That's true.
You'd think word would have gotten out. Well, I would hereby like to congratulate NPR music producer Lars Gotrich for finally taking home the coveted Chicken Bowl championship tiara, and it reads, encrusted in plastic diamonds, "Birthday Girl."
Nice.
It was pretty great. It was pretty great. Now, in terms of the non-Chicken Bowl-specific Super Bowl experience, we also got to see Christina Aguilera sing the national anthem. And
I heard it went great.
She moved some words around.
What's so proudly we had the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight. What so proudly we watched at the twilight's last gleaming.
She didn't just move some words around. She was moving notes around before she got the first breath out.
Well, that is true. That is true. She was very heavily focused on her acrobatics.
Yes.
To the point where she seemed to forget the words.
Mm-hmm.
And repeated, I believe, the Twilight's Last Gleaming section.
Yep.
Where she needed a...
I believe she needed ramparts are what we're missing.
Yeah, she needed some ramparts.
Didn't she also say reaming? I heard that she said
there
reaming.
There is some debate
there
about whether
debate
she
about
said reaming
she did
or not.
Or did not say reaming instead of gleaming, but it would be kind of
great. Changes the meaning.
Yeah.
A little bit.
A little bit. There was also the Black Eyed Peas. At the halftime show, wearing their light-up outfits.
I saw more tweets about that than I did about the Super Bowl itself, but that may just be the crowd I follow.
Well, you had a fine tweet yourself, Trey. Do you want to repeat that here?
It was kind of a fine-tuning of another tweet that I had seen, a couple of ideas that I fused into a single tweet. I basically said that this halftime show is what you would get if drag queens had designed Tron.
Mm.
Right? That was some bad, bad halftime show. And by the standard of a series of halftime shows in the 80s and 90s that Linda collected for us last year on the blog, you go back and watch those things from the 80s and 90s, and, you know, this is pretty bad even by those standards.
Up with
even
people.
Up with People and Donnie and Marie.
Well, here's a question. Glenn, did you actually watch the Super Bowl?
I didn't.
Okay. Which would you rather watch? Would you rather see the Black Eyed Peas performing with Slash? Or would you rather see Edward James Olmos introduce Phil Collins and Cirque du Soleil?
Yes. Boy, that's a Sophie's choice. I don't have an answer for that.
Yeah. It's the Olmos is definitely classic Ernest.
Almost.
Classic Ernest Super Bowl behavior. There are also, of course, the ads. Always get some attention. Any favorites this year?
There was the Darth Vader Volkswagen ad that had been making the rounds on the internet for a day or two.
Yeah, that's not a controversial choice. That's a very widely loved choice.
Well, and it's that interesting decision they've now made to release them before the game actually happens so that you know what you're watching for before
that
you actually
is, that
see
is
the
mystifying
ad.
Mystifying to me why you would do that.
Yeah.
That makes no sense to me at all.
I actually noticed a thing happening at your party, and I expect it's exactly what they hoped would happen, which is when the first second of that commercial came on, a couple of people went, watch this.
Yep. This one is good.
That's what
it's
I was going to say,
I think that's what they were going for.
Yeah, I knew we were probably going to talk about some of these ads, and I didn't watch the Super Bowl, so I spent a few minutes this morning watching them on the internet, and boy, that is just a dispiriting prospect to actually just...
To get up in the morning.
Commercials on your computer just to feed your head with all this sort of rampant consumerism for no real reason. Yeah. So I stopped after like 5 minutes because it just got a little too sad.
And I had thought about doing that because, truth be told, not only was I very tightly wound for the game, as you can imagine, but I was also hosting the Chicken Bowl, which was attended by roughly 50 to 60 people.
Mm-hmm.
And
was it only that many? It seemed like so many more.
And the notion of sitting down and paying attention to the commercials when, in fact, I missed the first three Packers touchdowns.
Yeah.
Wow. We totally did, too.
True.
You talk about time delay. Linda had, woo, then the play, then 5 seconds later, me running in saying, what happened? And going, woo!
Crash.
Thump. The notion of seeing the commercials, it's like, well, my favorite was for Nissan.
Yeah.
I just, it's, when there's this amazing game and you're...
You lost us all again.
When there are the Packers to talk about.
It's not just a Packers thing. It just, it seems like the Super Bowl is an event in itself, but it's become... it's become this bizarre thing where what everybody winds up talking about is the commercials, and I feel like that's been fed to us.
I love that you are actually losing your voice like a somewhat unhinged person.
Yeah, it's true. Well, it's not just what's fed to us. This is the largest audience of the year, right? So,
this was the most watched telecast of anything of all time.
I believe today's numbers were 111 million.
Well, and it's one of the few things that we as a society that is increasingly splintered, one of the few things that we all still watch.
And I believe the Glee episode that followed it was the third most watched scripted show of all time. That's the case despite the fact that that episode of Glee lost 75% of the lead-in. You know, you still wind up with this obscenely large audience. So it is definitely a major event.
Sure. And I did open up some random commercials this morning just to see what people were talking about. And, you know, I saw Pepsi Max commercials. I saw a GoDaddy commercial, which just had more of the adolescent meat-headed mouth breathery that I kind of associate with football commercials.
I thought you were going to say with Steven.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't say that.
Out loud?
I would think people would step up their game because it's not just people like Steven watching the Super Bowl. It's people like, ostensibly, other people. People like me, except not me.
Except not you.
Yeah.
We are really out of our depth here, aren't we?
We are so out of our depth, yes.
Yeah. Well, it's. I think the Super Bowl, you know, becomes one of those things where some people watch it for the football game. Some people watch it for the commercial. Some people watch it for the halftime show. And a lot of people just watch it because it's what everyone else is doing. And similar to what I think people do with the Oscars.
Yeah.
I see many Super Bowl Oscars parallels and firmly feel that I just wish there was more tackling on the Oscars. I would like to see more brutal face masks.
More jumping for catches and then being smashed by a defending player.
Exactly.
Actually, it's unusual this year that the Oscars will involve more celebration of amputation.
Yeah, that's true.
That's true. That is a good point. That is a good point. Then they do, of course, have the extended pregame where... They read the entire Declaration of Independence.
Nice. Right.
And for the support of this declaration...
With a firm reliance...
On the protection of divine providence...
We mutually pledge to each other...
Our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor...
What will they do that will be the equivalent of that in Hollywood, do you think? Will they read they have the memorial reading of the Hays Code?
Yes, or possibly they will have the memorial reading of that Sticks, Nicks, Hicks, Picks variety headline.
Nice.
Can we return briefly to the topic of commercials? I did find myself laughing with one of our copy editors here at NPR, Susan Vavrick, who, when the House ad came on, the promo for the new episodes of House that were coming up, and at the end of which, House tosses the cane to the kid in a little inspirational moment, and it goes badly wrong.
Dr. House?
Yeah?
I just want you to know, I think you're the best ever.
Me too.
Want my churro? Really, you can have it.
My patient just died. You think the Spanish deep-fried snack is going to make things better?
I guess I'll see you around then.
Hey, kid. Catch. Really thought you had that.
Susan let out this huge laugh and then turned to me as though to ask, why wasn't anyone else in the room watching? And she said, how old do you figure you have to be to get that joke?
Nice.
And so I wanted to put that question to the room. How old do you figure you have to be to get that joke in the middle of the Super Bowl?
The Mean Joe Green ad, which was a Coke ad where the kid gives Mean Joe Green a Coke and he throws the kid his jersey.
Mr. Green?
Yeah.
You need any help?
Mm-mm.
I just want you to know, I think you're the best ever.
Yeah, sure.
Want my Coke?
What do you want to think that ad was, 1980?
I would say maybe late 70s. Because that was during the Steelers' dominance.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Late 70s?
Yeah.
So late 70s would be, you know, you'd have to have been probably at least 8. Or 9.
You basically have to be... I'm probably
you have to be roughly my age, your age.
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably on the youngish edge of how
roughly
old.
Late 30s.
However,
probably to get
I will that. Point out that, like many things, has been referenced and parodied enough.
Yeah. Exactly.
Like many things, I can immediately cite the Simpsons parody.
Well, exactly. Mm-hmm.
And I still have these experiences where I'll see something and go, oh, that's what the Simpsons was parodying.
Yeah.
Right.
I've got a couple of friends who do sort of historic preservation for a living, and they were talking... very excitedly about the M&M ad, the Chevrolet ad with M&M.
What does this city know about luxury? What does a town that's been to hell and back know about the finer things in life? Well, I'll tell you, more than most. You see, it's the hottest fires that make the hardest steel. Add hard work and conviction, and the know-how that runs generations deep in every last one of us. That's who we are. That's our story.
This is the Motor City. This is what we do.
They seem to really read that ad as an argument for historic preservation, as a sort of celebration of the glories of great American architecture, in addition to, you know, obviously what it is meant to be.
Sure. I never have strong opinions about ads anymore, other than, like, last year they had the one with Betty White, and that's about as tricky.
Was that
as
what launched the whole Betty White?
It was part of it, yeah. It was definitely a big step. She had been in The Proposal, which was before that, and she had sort of been, people said she was funny in that. But yeah, the Super Bowl commercial was a big part of it.
I'll give it up to Coke for doing an old school ad about two guards on either side of a border, you know, and they trade a Coke between them, you know, high fructose corn syrup uniting people. That's kind of the...
As it so often does.
That's exactly what they used to do, Coke. It's a simple sort of treacly little message, but done well. So props to them. Much better than the Pepsi Max ads, which were just all sort of, as I said, adolescent meatheadery.
If we're going to, you know, turn the corner to complaints, I saw a good deal of upset about, Groupon ads that people are accusing of exploiting various international tragedies.
The one that I saw started off with Cuba Gooding Jr. Talking about dolphins.
Saving the whales or the dolphins?
Whales. The most spectacular creatures on the planet.
Hi, I'm Cuba Gooding Jr. Today, their numbers are dwindling. Somebody's got to save them.
And then it turned the corner for them to be like, but actually, it's a crass ad for Groupon.
But it's more fun watching them jumping, playing. And since 100 of us bought at Groupon.com, we're each getting an $86 whale-watching cruise for just $49.
I have to agree with the people who sort of said, I don't know exactly what they thought they were going for there, but I don't think it went the way they thought it would.
Yeah.
But anyway, so having discussed the Super Bowl and the Oscars, you know, we can move on to another one of the main events of February. As some of our Facebook folks asked us to discuss, it turns out that by the time you hear this podcast, it will be almost Valentine's Day.
She says through gritted teeth.
No.
I don't understand the universal dislike for
this
holiday.
I understand.
How can you object to an annual observance in memory of the guy who was clubbed, stoned, and beheaded to save our souls?
That's right.
Is that? Okay. No. Okay.
Yeah. Well, so let's establish a baseline. Thompson, Valentine's Day, where do you
come
from? Con. Why?
I think regardless of your circumstance, Valentine's Day usually entails a negative.
Right.
I think that if you are in a relationship, you have the obligation to purchase something that they may or may not want. Mm-hmm. If you are not in a relationship, it is a reminder that you are not in a relationship. Uh-huh. If you are in a struggling relationship, it is a reminder that your relationship is struggling. If you are in a new relationship, it lays out all this minefield of what do you do about Valentine's Day. So Valentine's Day can suck it.
And how about you, Trey Graham? General feelings, Valentine's Day, pro con?
I have mixed feelings, officially.
Uh-huh.
Because I am not allowed to have con feelings because I am in a relationship. So
I think Stephen's theory is coming true right now.
I would like to say that that at the moment, I am very much not a fan of Valentine's Day, but I am sure that I will get there. By the 14th.
Just gonna leave
it. Wow, you have just completely made my argument for me.
Yep. I'm sorry, the other half listens to this podcast, so you people are on your own.
It should be noted, regardless of the situation in my life, at any point, at any time in my life, I've always hated Valentine's Day.
How about you, Glenn Weldon? General feelings, Valentine's Day?
The first Valentine's Day I spent with the guy I've been with for 12 years, I thought I had to do something. So I got heart-shaped bloody blah and glitter.
I did.
Because it's, you know, it's the first one. You don't know. You're still sounding each other out. So I did the thing where there's like, oh, this is a clue to the thing. Go over here to find this thing, and it's a clue to the other thing. Like 17 of these things.
Oh my God.
And to his credit, he picked up the first one and said, okay, what the hell is this?
That's how you knew.
That's how I knew. Yeah. It's like, oh, you see this as the cynical sham that I see it as. Good. We are on board.
Outstanding. Well, we thought that we would offer everybody an opportunity to comment on either or both something you think is appropriate to Valentine's Day, unironically. You know, a movie, a song, something that you think is romantic and straight on appropriate for Valentine's Day, and or something that you think is twistedly appropriate for Valentine's Day, a.k.a. bitter, angry, cynical.
Now you're talking my language.
Yeah. Well, I thought I might be. Yeah. So who wants to start? Anyone? Stephen Thompson, let's start with you.
All right. First of all, I'm going to completely subvert this concept briefly.
I'm going to subvert the paradigm.
I'm going to subvert a paradigm all up in this piece. And say that Valentine's Day, as much as I've just eviscerated it as the hollow charade that it is also my son's birthday. Mm-hmm. My son Jonah will be 10 on Valentine's Day. Mm-hmm. And the holiday has been somewhat rescued for me by this phenomenon, because suddenly Valentine's Day can be about a celebration of my dear son.
Right.
So I would love it if in the comments section on the blog, if on our Facebook page, if you go to Facebook and search for Pop Culture Happy Hour, you can find our Facebook page. Please like us. Please recommend appropriate gifts for a darling 10-year-old boy so that I may purchase them for him.
This has nothing to do with the question.
It is nice to see, however, that you're outsourcing your parenting again.
That'll always be the dream.
Don't be surprised if I cheer for your subversion of the paradigm and accidentally punch you in the face while cheering. I hear that's a thing.
Okay, the piece of art that I can unabashedly, I've decided to go the sincere route. Everybody's, you know, anyone can be bitter, not me. recommend a somewhat underpraised album by an artist I've actually discussed on this show before, which is Clem Snide,
right.
Which is one of my favorite bands of all time. Mm-hmm. And the singer, Eve Barzelay, who did that, if you recall, about 10 or 12 episodes ago, did a songwriting thing where for $100 he would write you a song.
Right.
And actually, one of our listeners sent me a song that they commissioned, and it was wonderful. He has a record from 2003 called Soft Spot, in which he decided that he would write an album, somewhat inspired by the fact that he had become a new dad. He decided to write an album of straightforwardly sincere love songs. Mm-hmm. But because it's Clem Snide and because it's Eve Barzelay and this is how he writes songs, they're all sort of approaching the topic from this kind of slightly sideways approach. And so even a song that is just straight up like, I love you, is worded as, you know, we have love strong enough to doubt. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of just amazing turns of phrase, you know, all through this record. There's a song on there that's one of my favorite songs of all time called Find Love, which I have said on the All Songs Considered podcast, this particular song will be, my kids will have to get married just so this song will be forcibly played at the ceremony. They can get divorced. They can get a quickie divorce. They can get it annulled right after the fact. But this particular song will have to be played at their weddings.
And Dadzilla.
This, you know, it's dad's only demand. So they will look back on the memory of their father and play Find Love.
Don't let hurricanes hold you back. Raging rivers or shark attacks, find love, then give it all away. Find love, then give it all away.
Seek this record out. It's enormously sweet, but there are little hints of darkness all through it.
I do agree with that. I like that record a lot also. Glenn Weldon, talk to me about Valentine's Day.
Sure, I got something sincere and something not.
Right.
The sincere thing is not an obscure album at all. It's the Magnetic Field's 69 Love Songs. These are perfectly constructed little pop songs. Stephen Merritt is a smart, very sardonic lyricist. There's a layer of irony over everything he sings, and his voice has a certain sad, defeated quality. But
just the way I like it.
Yes.
Don't we all?
But when he lets real emotions kind of break through, it is astonishingly moving. And so this song is called Crazy for You, But Not That Crazy.
I built a
a ship with my own hands to take us to the moon. I took a pen in my own hand and wrote you 100 tunes. Now I'm crazy for you, but not that crazy.
Now, at some point in the song, he rhymes, broke my virgin flesh with, I performed acts of devotion as if you were Ganesh. I'm in. It's just that simple. So
nice.
The entire album is fantastic. It's kind of the internal soundtrack of my life, unfortunately, because I hear it in my head all the time.
I also want to hugely, hugely second your recommendation of 69 Love Songs. Mm-hmm. My particular favorite song from that record is Nothing Matters When We're Dancing.
Oh, yes.
Which, as dark as that record can get in spots, that's just such an incredibly light, sweet song. And it's got that rhyming of Nothing Matters When We're Dancing. In tat or tatters, you're entrancing. Be we in Paris or in Lansing.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love that. That just melts me every time. That's a wonderful record.
Really is. The better thing is what I consider to be the quintessential date movie. Back in the day when I was young, I had a checklist of, you know, how you, when you're young, you think the person you're going to be with must like the same music you do, must like the same movies you do.
Right.
You get older, you realize that that means you're dating yourself. And speaking
Nobody
for me,
nobody wants to do that.
Exactly. I get kind of tired of myself, frankly. I'm kind of tiresome. So I threw that out. The one thing I kept is this movie, which, as I say, is the quintessential date movie, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? This movie was a revelation to me because I grew up in a passive-aggressive household where we took everything out on our stomach linings. We never shouted. And this movie is just scabrous and screeching and really, really funny. So that's what I consider a perfect Valentine's Day would be to sit down with Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf.
Good choice, Glenn Whelan. Mine, I started off thinking about something bitter and angry, but I kept coming back to what's one of those things where something sort of forces itself upon you despite your best efforts to think about something else. A couple weeks ago, I was watching clips of Gene Kelly while writing a post about this Volkswagen commercial, which has transplanted him and Donald O'Connor into the back of a Jetta.
As was their dying wish.
A commercial I did not like. And I wound up watching all these clips of him dancing. So I wound up watching clips of Gene Kelly, and I came across one that was from Summerstock, which is a movie he made in 1950 with Judy Garland. It was actually her last movie for MGM. And there's a lot of sort of legend surrounding this movie that she was in very bad shape when they made this movie and that she was really struggling. And as I said, it was her last movie with MGM. But they have a little dance to a song called You Wonderful You.
I'm glad I met you, you wonderful you. I can't forget you, you wonderful you. You're like a breath of spring, a whole new thing has happened. And without much ado, I look at you and there stands love.
This is one of these songs my mother used to talk about, how many musicals had what we used to talk about as almost like a music box song, a song that could play from a music box. In The Music Man, it's Goodnight, My Someone, and in The Sound of Music, it's Edelweiss. And there is often some very, very, very simple song, and You Wonderful You is sort of the song in Summerstock that's like that. And it's a very simple, obviously, Gene Kelly is this terribly famous athletic dancer. It's a very, very small dance and a very, very simple one. And it's really just the two of them in an empty barn. And not a lot happens, but it's this sort of charming. They're not quite together yet, but they're getting there. And it's this very charming little song. And it's just terribly, terribly sweet and lovely. And a little song and a little dance. And it's the kind of thing I like. So I kept returning to this clip of Gene Kelly and Judy Garland dancing in Summerstock. And I will link to it. So And so that's my upbeat one. My other one, if I have a bitter one, I will nominate a song called Regretting What I Said, which is by a woman named Christine Lavin. And it's been covered by the Chenille sisters and a couple of other people, which is how I heard it. But basically, it consists of a woman explaining all the things that she really didn't mean when she said them to her boyfriend, such as, starts off, I didn't mean it when I said, I hope the cable in the elevator snaps when you step on board.
I didn't mean it when I said, I hope the cable in the elevator snaps when you step on board. I was joking when I said, I hope you crack your head and get mangled by the downstairs revolving door.
And it goes through an entire litany, including, I'd feel bad if at the airport you were mistaken for a local sex offender, arrested, beaten up, and thrown in jail. So she didn't actually mean all these things that are supposed to happen, dismembered by the marijuana-sniffing dogs. So it sort of takes him through the experience of going all the way on this ski trip without her. And all the things that she doesn't really mean it when she said she hoped they happen. And it is sort of a bitterness classic song that just kind of refutes the entire idea of romantic love. And what could be more appropriate than that for Valentine's Day, I say. So, Trey Graham?
I can tell you. In fact, I would be stoned, drawn, and quartered, and beheaded by the theatrical community if I did not, on the occasion of Valentine's Day, mention Passion, the 1994 Stephen Sondheim musical, which is, let me quote from Wikipedia.
As we so often
about, yes, about subjects including obsession, beauty, power, manipulation, passion, illness, and love. It is a play, and I'm no longer quoting Wikipedia. I would like the record to show. It is a play in which you're drawn in by a story about a romance between a handsome soldier and a beautiful woman. And then he gets sent away, and he becomes the object of the obsessive passion of a bitter, sick, ugly, lonely woman. And over the course of the play, he realizes that there is more nobility in this one woman's passion for him than in every great moment he's had together with his lover, because the lover isn't really invested in their relationship. She's happy and comfortable in her home with her husband, whom she will not leave for the handsome soldier she supposedly is devoted to. The obsessive person is at least willing to throw away everything, including her own dignity, for his sake.
For now I'm seeing love like none I've ever known. A love as pure as breath, as permanent as death, implacable as stone. A love that like a knife has cut into a life I wanted left alone.
And obviously this is not a thing that is going to end well, but he realizes a few things about the nature of love and about the nature of passion, which is, after all, the title of the show. It is musically gorgeous. And the early production I saw of it was probably 1996, in a very small production at a Washington, D.C. theater. One of the single most beautiful things I've ever seen on a stage.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Good choice.
And now my unalloyed, sure, serious, heartfelt piece of art related to Valentine's Day. And this is really, really obvious, so please forgive me, everyone. The first big love duet in La Bohème, O Suave Fanciulla, after she's sung her song and he has sung his song, and they have this really, really gorgeous duet. And I'm particularly fond of what is a fairly famous recording with Luciano Pavarotti and Mirella Freni. I believe it's from the late 60s, and let's get Mike to play a little bit of it right here. That is the end of O Suave Fanciullo with Luciano Pavarotti and Mirella Freni. The words, of course, as you can hear, amor, amor, they're going out into the wings on a high sea together.
Oh, fantastic. And happy Valentine's Day to all. We have...
Or not.
Or not. Or miserable, sad, exactly. Possibly death-filled
Depending
Valentine's
on your
Day.
Needs.
We have time for a quick round of what's making us happy this week, and we will keep it moving and go around the table with... I'm not going to start with Thompson because we'll never get done. Glenn Weldon, what's making you happy this week?
Last night, we're taping this on Monday. Last night, in a feat of counter-programming, the Canadian supergroup The New Pornographers released a video over the internets. The video is called Moves, off of The New Pornographers album Together. It is directed by Tom Sharpling of The Best Show on WFMU, and the comedy team of Sharpling and Worship. John Worster of the Mountain Goats and Superchunk plays A.C. Newman of the New Pornographers in this video, and he is joined by a who's who of comedy in forms of lots and lots of cameo appearances by people such as Wyatt Cenac, Julie Klausner, Todd Barry, John Hodgman, Donald Glover, John Oliver, Bill Hader, Paul Rudd, and an unrecognizable Horatio Sanz. I had no idea that was this guy.
Yes.
And it answers definitively the question, what would hardworking punk veteran and indie rock darling Ted Leo look like in terrifying drag? And the answer turns out to be a lot like Terry Sweeney's Nancy Reagan on heroin. If everybody remembers that, that takes people back.
I do.
So seek it out. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Outstanding. Great choice. Trey Graham, making you happy this week.
I'm just going to have to go with Valentine's Day and the greeting card industry.
Wait,
hear me out. Because I have, even as this podcast goes out, I am going to have just enough time to rifle through the greeting card racks to find just the right smart-ass greeting card that says something bitter and jaded about Valentine's Day, and then find just the right little gift certificate to a nice restaurant to slip inside so that the husband doesn't kill me. Love you, sweetie.
So that the husband doesn't kill me.
That is like the most romantic thing I ever heard, actually.
That's awesome. You know what makes Trey happy? You know what's making Trey happy?
Having it both ways.
Obligation.
It's true.
Obligation is making Trey happy.
All right, Stephen Thompson, what's making you happy this week?
Well, if I may describe my feelings for the Green Bay Packers by reading from their Wikipedia page. The Green Bay Packers are an American football team based in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
No.
Is there
anything else?
Okay. Well, obviously, I'm very happy about my son's 10th birthday. Mm-hmm. I'm delighted about that. Happy birthday, Jonah. I've tried to approach my excitement and my happiness about the Packers winning the Super Bowl in any number of ways. But what I'd like to say is making me happy is the lifetime of disappointment that has led me to this moment and cast it. You know, the last time the Packers won the Super Bowl, I was but a barefoot boy with cheek of tan. No, I was 24 years old and had my whole life ahead of me. And little did I know how much happier I would be about a Super Bowl win, knowing what a hard knock life it would be between then and now. So, you know, those defeats, those 4th and 26 against Philadelphia, the Brett Favre throwing up that lollipop that got intercepted against the New York Giants in the NFC Championship game, all of those have made this moment that much sweeter, and that is what is making me happy this week.
That is epic. That is the most impressive recasting of self-pity I've ever heard.
Yeah, I thought you were going for a different word that ended in ick.
Yeah. And I congratulate you.
Thank you.
I could easily say that what's making me happy this week is having gotten to see Steven watch the Packers win, because it really was pretty much that great. Mm-hmm. But instead, I will branch out on my own. I have spoken before about my deep love, both on the podcast and on the blog, for the AFI Silver, which is my arty movie house. And this weekend, I went to their Talk Cinema series, which is a little thing they do where they show a movie that has not yet been released in this market, either an independent movie or a foreign movie. This weekend, it happened to be a Dutch melodrama, a subtitled Dutch melodrama.
Really?
called Bride Flight, which is about these women on this flight from Holland to New Zealand, where they're going to go and meet their husbands who, after World War II, this takes place in 1953, and after World War II, their husbands have gone there to set up farms or businesses or whatever. Apparently, New Zealand was the new frontier for some Dutch fellows. So they are going down there, and it becomes this sort of sweeping, almost Winds of War or Thornbirds-like. Like I said, it is a melodrama in the not bad way. Mm-hmm. And it is very European movie in a way. Everybody's naked a lot. There's a lot more sex than you're going to see in an average American film of this sort of style, I would say. So it was a sort of quintessential branch out, do something different, watch something different, try something else kind of experience. I enjoyed it very much. It is a step along the positivity commitment that I made in January to attempt to like more things and try more things I like. And it is also, as I said to Stephen, movie nerd day camp. Mm-hmm. And because those are the only people who would attend something like this at 10 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday. So once again, I have to take my hat off to my local movie nerd theater for what's making me happy this week.
Really is a wonderful theater.
Which was Dutch melodrama.
So what's actually making you happy this week, Linda Holmes? You began your day with Dutch melodrama and ended it with Chicken Bowl.
That's right.
Is the high-low fantasticness of your day.
Well, this is how I like to construct my life, is a sort of high-low roller coaster. And I realized at some point that my beloved high-low roller coaster had kind of become a low and lower roller coaster.
Spending too much time with me.
And so, yeah. And so
I do not dispute that.
So I've been trying to, branch out, like I said, try more things. And the Dutch melodrama, it was so great. And the previous night, I had been to see Bringing Up Baby, which they showed as part of their Screen Valentine's series, which was also wonderful. I don't want to make it seem like all I ever do is go to the movies, because that sounds a little bit sad. But this was a nice pair of outings, and it was fun.
Absolutely.
It was fun. I was very, very happy. That's what's making me happy this week. Gloating is part of what's making me also, I should say. This is also the last podcast that we're going to do before Stephen and I live blog the Grammys.
Oh, yes.
Which is which will be the night of Sunday.
Sunday, February 13th.
We will be live blogging the Grammys with Jacob Gans, also of NPR Music. And we'd love to see all of you there. We will be talking about the Black Eyed Peas, I'm sure. And
I'll have to come up with some new lines about the Black Eyed Peas. I used them all up in last year's live blog.
And other geniuses. So we'd love to see you there. So that will take place on Monkey C, I think. We will have the live blog. So we just wanted to let you know. So that brings us to the end of Pop Culture Happy Hour. As we have mentioned a couple times, you can find us on Facebook. Just search for Pop Culture Happy Hour on Facebook. You'll find us and a few thousand of your pals. And you can also follow us on Twitter. You can follow me and the blog at NPR Monkey C. You can follow Stephen at I Dislike Stephen. That's STEPHEN. You can follow Glenn at GH Weldon. That's WELDON. You can follow Trey at Trey Graham. Oh, Stephen, sing it to me.
Trey with an E, then Graham like the cracker.
Hey, Trey, remember when he first started doing that? Remember what you used to say whenever he would do that?
Oh, stop.
Oh, stop.
He used to say, never gets old.
Yeah.
Remember those days?
Yeah.
We were so young.
Wow. I've given up on that.
We should mention also that you can follow our esteemed producer, Mike Katzif, as we always call him now, at Mike Katzif. That's K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in-and-out music, which we love and which we know that you love. And that's about it for this week. Thanks to all of you guys for being here, as always.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure.
And thanks to all of you for being here, and we will see you next week.